Welcome to Podnuts Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 243, Regulating the IT Industry. I am your host, Jeff Hallisch. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
I've been loaded. Let's get this thing started.
And also next to him, we have, well, not quite next to him, but on the other side, between him is Chris Carruthers from Remote Support Tech Team. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm just as amped up to get this started, Jeff.
Awesome. And last but not least, we have Kurt Soderquist from PC Doctor. Kurt, how are you doing?
Good. It's been a while, and I'm glad to be back.
Awesome. Great to have you. All right, let's go ahead, and we're going to start off by sharing a tip or story that we could learn from. And John, why don't we hit it off to you?
Well, just a couple quickies. I don't know why anybody would want to listen to any other podcast besides us, but I'll put a couple other links in here or shout outs on some tech related / business ownership related podcasts that people may not know about. The first one's the Rework podcast. That's a podcast about a better way to work and run your business. So that's really good. I'll put a link for that in there. The other one is the Naked Security podcast. I'm not sure if anybody listens to that, but that's from the makers of Sophos Security. And finally, the other one I really like is the Defensive Security podcast. And they do a nice job of try to wrap up the week's security news and pick out lessons that can be applied from it. So I really like that. So just quick and dirty, three little podcasts that are good listens for those of us in the IT industry and running our own business.
Awesome. And I will say, as far as podcasts go, yes, there are many, many great podcasts out there. And this is only one of them that shares a certain side of the information. But there's much more that can be gone into. And there's other experts in different areas that are good at what they do and can talk about those types of things. Because although I'd love to talk about things like naked security, we don't.
Well, I think it's kind of our job here to expose a lot of things in the IT industry for anybody that wants to find out about it.
Absolutely. All right, so let's see. Let's go ahead and go to Mr. Carruthers. What do you have for us this week?
So what I have for you is these fidget spinners. No. My kids have been playing with fidget spinners all week. I'm starting to get there. I want to go back to something that I was talking about before, and that's the Pokemon stops. I know that a lot of people are like, oh, man, what are you talking about? But I just want to put it out there that there's been a lot of businesses that have actually been doing really well with it. Throwing the lures on the stops because of all the events going on over the last 3 weeks. That's still going strong. So if you do have a computer shop, and you want to attract some more people to come into the shop, maybe to buy some of those portable phone chargers or, you know, do phone screen replacements or anything like that, throwing those lures on those stops are a great way to do it, especially if you have a stop nearby or a gym nearby.
That's awesome. I still like that piece of advice. That's great.
It's been putting a lot of business in there. I can tell you that just from going around with the kids and playing with people, people are talking about how they've bought 2 and 3, portable battery packs to charge their phones on the go because they're playing for 12 hours at a time.
Okay. There should be an intervention for that, number one, but that's still cool.
Hey, if it's getting people out and exercising and socializing in person, I'm not going to put a stop to it, Jeff. I'm going to make sure they have a battery.
Listen, I've been out there and I don't see a whole lot of socializing. What I see is a lot of this.
Well, then maybe in Canada, we're just nicer to each other and we decide to have a conversation. Well,
of course you are. Did you bump into somebody? I'm sorry. all right. No, that's a great, hey, thinking outside the box. That's what we do here. So I think that's awesome.
So Chris, you're placing a lure or what are you placing?
Yeah. So it's
in America terms. So I can understand.
Yeah, no, that's what it's called. It's called a lure module. I can get a price to go into the show notes. I don't have my tablet with me right now. If you don't play the game on it regularly, then for a couple bucks, you can buy a little 5-pack of these things called lure modules that you can put on a stop and it attracts Pokemon to that stop so that people are likely to come across. And it shows a little, it looks like confetti, I guess. There's a visual representation on the map that shows that that's happening so that people are attracted to come over to it.
Awesome. All right. And
apparently they're flower petals.
Flower petals. I was just told
that they're flower petals. Yeah.
Confetti, flower petals, all the same thing. All right, Mr. Soderquist, what do you have for us this week?
I guess with me usually getting late into the game with some of the tools that we used to use or we do use. There was one that we talked about back on a podcast where you were talking about Snappy Driver Installer. And that came in really handy when I decided to actually use it for the first time. And I had one where I did a reload for a lady. And she was assuming that her computer had Bluetooth on it, even though the website for the manufacturer, which was Dell, did not have any drivers for Bluetooth. But the Snappy Driver Installer found it. So that was kind of a nice savior, considering that her mouse was Bluetooth and she was complaining that it wasn't working. So thank you to that one.
Cool. Now, I will tell you that a lot of people, John, this has changed over time from what you and I probably remember as far as Dells, HPs, and stuff like that. There used to be a time where you would get an image with a lot of the drivers already built in from HP, Dell, and whatnot. And nowadays, you're getting basically, if you do get a disk or a download, it's basically what I would call almost a vanilla image with a couple of branding things on there. And then all your extra drivers on top of that usually are coming on another disk, or sometimes you even have to go to the manufacturer's website to get those.
You put it in the exact order of what has happened, at least with the corporate PCs. It used to be an image with everything, and then actually a little like software module that would pop up and install the drivers for you. Then it went to two disks, your OS, and a driver install CD. Now it has gone to a USB stick that basically just has Windows 10 on it.
And it's going to have pretty much most of your drivers anyways, probably except for a few of those.
Well, you know, not a whole lot of Dell really dedicated stuff on there. I think I showed the little USB stick before, but you know, it's just Windows 10. And if you need something specific that came with your configuration or whatever, you got to bust out there. For those of us on the video chat, you can see the little Dell USB stick you get now.
Mm. Ooh.
And you got to request that when you do a build. It doesn't come by default. Because you're going to go download the creator. And usually that's
make you miss the days
running to get to the Dell site, period.
Go ahead, Chris.
Does it make you miss the days when you got all your Windows Server updates on floppy mailed out to you?
It's sad that I'm that old.
And Chris doesn't even know that, except he read it somewhere on a blog years and years.
Oh, come on. Give me a little bit of credit. Give me a little bit of credit. My professor in college had to do that, and he showed us the floppies.
Oh, okay. Your professor in college. Yeah. What was that, 3 years ago?
But no. Come on. Seven.
Yes.
Remember
there you go.
Windows 10 drive was installed by floppy?
Oh, my gosh.
Jeff, right. I believe we just cleaned out all my floppy disks when you helped me move.
So. Yes, we did. Ooh. Yes, we did. Yeah, a lot of them. All right. So first of all, I want to give a shout out to Kevin Boynton for sending me a Synology NAS. I was talking about it on a podcast where I have not been able to have the time or effort or actually purchase a Synology, but I've heard a lot of good things about them. So a lot of you can see behind me on my desk, I have a brand new Synology NAS all set up, and I found a couple of 2 terabyte hard drives that I threw in. And I believe it is mirrored them, so it gives me 2 terabytes of storage. And so basically, I'm going to go ahead and start backing up some things on the computers here in the office and work with some of the apps and things. It was really, really easy to set up. And I like it because one of the things it does, which I didn't realize, it's like a little mini computer, really. And it goes into hibernation mode. So right now, you can see there's basically a blue light on it, but the hard drives aren't spinning or anything. Because the first thing, on older spinning hard drives, a lot of times you guys will remember the click and clack of the sound of the hard drives spinning up, spinning down, moving around when it's moving data. Well, I was a little concerned about that, but it is whisper quiet because it's in hibernation mode because it's not being used. And when you wake it up, it's fairly fast to get to the apps and all the information on there. So I'll have fun playing with that over the next couple of weeks, and I will give my 2 cents back when I talk about that. My tip for the week And this is something I've been playing around with for, I think I've had it since Father's Day. There is a, I got a new internet connected thermostat, and it's the Echo B4. And one of the reasons that I got this particular one, John and I were talking about this a while back, and I wanted a something that could have extra sensors that I could put in different rooms. Now, a lot of you know that in most homes, the thermostat is usually not put in the best place in the house. It's usually a place that's really not occupied ever. So to get the temperature to either the upper rooms or other rooms across the house, you kind of got to turn it down a little bit cooler, and then you have a lot of cold spots, hot spots, and all that. With the now, they gave us two sensors for free, and one sensor came with the thermostat. So you have the thermostat, which is a sensor, which is down in my dining room. And then I have three little tiny sensors that sit on little stands, and I've got one in my bedroom, one in this office, and in one of my kids' rooms, where they tend to get hot, so especially during the summertime. And what it does is it every room that's occupied, because the sensor will pick you up and see that it's occupied, it will actually take a median value of the temperature that you want it at. So let's say you want it at 75 degrees. It'll take a median temperature between all the occupied spaces, and then it will turn your air conditioning on and off according to get to those temperatures. So what it has done, now in my house, two-level house on the bottom floor, I've had to shut all my registers. Once I did that, though, everything is more of a median, nice, it's almost the same everywhere you go in the house, which is nice. Because before, you'd push all the stuff upstairs, and basically the thermostat downstairs would read a certain number, and so the air conditioner would just keep running and running and running. Now it's on and off as it needs to be, and it keeps the house much, much better. And what's really cool is, if I'm sitting up here podcasting, like right now, and it gets a little bit hot, which it did a little bit earlier, I can grab my app on the phone, open it up, and turn it down a couple degrees, which I like. So I like remote controls. Actually, I just like controlling everything. That's what I do. But the Echo B4, in my opinion, is a great product. Now, for those that don't know, the Echo B4 also, if you don't have something like an Alexa, the Echo B4 is actually also an Alexa. You can control your temperature. You can talk to it. You can ask it the weather, all this kind of stuff. So you kind of get two products with one, or two things with one product, which I thought was kind of cool. So that is my tip. If you guys are looking for an internet-connected thermostat, in my opinion, this is it's really cool. I like it. So check that out. And they're not a sponsor. I just like them. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll get into our hot and fiery topic for today. All right, DC On Convention 2017 in Washington, D.C. is September 16th and 17th. It is about a month away. IT conference for techs and business owners reimagined. Learn from fellow techs and business owners. Get business strategies that work in the real world. Discover new tech. If you're an owner, operator in managed services, IT consulting, break fix, then this is the place for you. Get your hotel and tickets now. Only 100 tickets available. Go to onconvention.io. Now, tickets are still available, but my understanding is people are buying them up. So it's a month away. If you plan on doing this, get your tickets now. Get your hotel room. Find somebody to room with. You're going to have people there like Mike Smith from the Mike Tech Show. You're going to have Mr. John Dubinsky, who's here on the panel. You're going to have Paco LeBron, who is who's been with us for a long time from this show and the computer business marketing show. Tongue twister. Also, Matthew Rodella will be down there. He actually lives in the area. And you're going to have other people like the Podnuts Pro Team. You're going to have actually the three M's. So you're going to have Marvin, Martin, and Matt. And they'll all be down there too. So if you guys want to get a chance to not only rub shoulders with other technicians, then go ahead and get down there, because you're going to see these guys and they're going to do a presentation and you're going to be able to talk to them one-on-one, actually get to shake hands and meet and greet and all that kind of stuff. So definitely go to onconvention.io, get your tickets now. It's less than a month away. You still have time to plan it out and get it done.
Well, the cool thing there is, you know, Paco and I are going, and now Rainey's going, but we're not presenting. We're just going to hang and learn. So the cool thing is we won't be preoccupied, or at least this time, so we'll just be able to hang out with everybody else.
Cool. Yep, definitely. Definitely be a lot of time for that, from my understanding, if you look at the schedule over on their website. So very cool. All right. Today we're going to talk about regulating the IT industry. And I went back and looked at the past episodes, and I'm still trying to figure out a way of getting a listing of all the things we've ever talked about, because sometimes we forget. And I saw that we had a show on governing IT, and I think it was back around episode 219, maybe, something like that. And so with that episode, Chris, I think we were supposed to talk about it back then, and I think you were supposed to be on the show, but I think something came up and you were not on that particular show.
Oh.
So you are not around to talk about governing IT. But we're going to take a little bit of a twist on that. And Chris had a rant last week that he did from his car. And we won't talk about whether it was safe or unsafe with a baby in the back.
Oh, come on.
But, no, he was doing a rant on, I think it was on Facebook Live and on his YouTube channel. So he was talking about something that is passionate to him and to a lot of other people. And it's a subject that has come up over time, and I promised him that we would talk about it on the show. One of the things that came up during this rant, we were talking about, you know, things like, should you have to apprentice under a qualified tech? Because Chris was equating this to skilled trades, and this is actually a skilled trade, which I 100% agree with. So with that being said, I want Chris to go ahead and talk about a few of the things in what he sees as far as how do you regulate this? What are some of the things that we need to think about? And we're going to have some interaction in between and talk about maybe the pros and cons of being able to get something like this done. Because from what I can see, it's about 50-50 out there. About 50% of the people are like, yes, and 50% of the people are like, no way. And so we're going to dive into some of those subjects and figure out what it is that maybe could be done, that you could regulate this industry a little bit more and make it more like an apprenticeable skilled trade. So, Chris, go ahead and give us a background of kind of your thought process and what you were talking about.
Sure. So the how, not the why, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, nothing's simple. We can sit here and we can give a really simple linear explanation as to how this could be done, but we all know that bureaucracy never works that way, right? So in the first place, in order for a skilled trade to have any kind of a regulation to it, there has to be some sort of a group that can lobby for the laws in the first place, right? So you know, I know that people will bring up the ACRBO. There's probably a couple of others out there, but we would need to have a central regulatory board that would, you know, create the rules in the first place and lobby to have them brought into law. So that's probably the most difficult portion of it. After that, it's figuring out, you know, the minute details, right? Anybody who's running an IT company right now, very clearly, you know, you're going to have somebody that can be the mentor. So if you're running a successful company now, there's no reason for you to need to apprentice under somebody. You should be able to take on apprentices at that point. So we would need to have a grandfathered system for those existing technicians that are out there. From there, you know, the apprenticeship programs would, if it runs like any of the other trades, they're going to be subsidized by the varying governments that they're part of, right? So there would have to be government sponsorships to be able to get the apprenticeships done in the first place, because they are paid, they're not free. We have to deal with what kind of fees technicians are going to have to pay in order to be able to have those types of licenses to be able to practice in the first place. Because, you know, everything costs money to do. So we're going to have fees to be able to cover that. And then a voting structure, right? How is everybody going to be able to vote? Because not everything is going to be just passed by a board. Things are going to have to go out to the community. So there's a lot of big portions that need to be figured out, and then it would trickle down to the smaller portions, like, you know, what's a fair wage and things like that.
Okay. I think that's a good synopsis and a good way to get started. So, John, what are your thoughts about regulating the IT industry as far as doing some apprenticeships through companies, through existing companies, having obviously we kind of talked about from the government side on the last show. We understand that government does not always work in our best interest. But besides that, if we were to put something together, what are some of the things that maybe we could look at that would make sense for getting the pizza techs out of the arena?
Let me ask a question before I answer. Why are we assuming, or why are, what is our justification for that we believe that regulation is needed? I just want, who's going to be devil's advocate on that side to tell me that?
Chris will.
Okay. What, Chris definitely would. there's too much damage being done, both on the reputation of the IT industry in general, as well as on the consumer side, right? There are consumers that are getting horrible advice from people who are not qualified to be giving the advice that they're giving, which would never go away. It doesn't matter how well regulated things are. That'll never go away. But it can be significantly reduced if you won't get hired as a technician unless you have apprenticed under somebody, unless you have a proper trading license to do so. Just like, you know, my neighbor might do his own plumbing, but that doesn't mean it's a good idea, right? So, you know, that's the idea. On top of that, even just without thinking about the damage that's being done, without the liability that needs to be taken, you know, because there's plenty of people out there practicing IT in big business without insurance, which to me is insane. And that's something that would be put under regulation. Is just dealing with the idea that we are a skilled trade. So right now, anybody can just start up a computer company and call themselves a computer technician, and there's nothing stopping them from doing that. If it were regulated, we would be seen more like the mechanics, more like the plumbers. We would be seen as a skilled trade without needing to work at that, right? Not all of us have those customers that don't look at us as a professional, but some of us do. Some of us have those clients that treat us like, you know, the I don't know, some unskilled trade. I don't want to say anything specific because I don't want to offend anybody.
That's good choice, Chris.
Well, let me come up with my devil's advocate response. I'm against regulation, but not 100%. I think there is some fitting. I think there maybe should be some specialization in our industry, but I'm against the regulation as a whole. One, I think it would raise prices even higher than they're going now. Two, I don't think it's going to stop pizza techs. And the way that I say it, reason I say that is, even in a regulated industry, it's not like a lawyer, where a lawyer has to pass the bar, get to a certain level, and then all the lawyers play on the same playing field, meaning in court. You don't practice law on the side generally, meaning it's not like a plumber where your brother could do your plumbing for you, not pull a building permit. No one ever would be the wiser, even though it's totally wrong until 3 months from now when it all leaks and goes to heck. You know, that's my argument against regulation making it better. You know, I'm sure I'll pick on Canada and then I'll go the other way. Canadian healthcare is regulated, but the scoop is that everybody comes down to U.S. for major healthcare. U.S. pharmacies and the medical industry is regulated, but everybody tries to go to Canada to get their cheap drugs. So, you know, in both of those cases, and there's 100 or even 1,000 examples that could go both ways, positive and negatively on that. Two, the public doesn't want it. I really dug around and tried to find a little bit of information on that. And unfortunately, the IT industry is rated as one of the most trusted. So unless the public's pushing for it, the government's not going to do it. I mean, just like Chris said, it would have to be us getting together and saying we want to be regulated. And in our straw poll, it's about 50-50. It's going to be tough to do that. Now, if I was going to change sides and say, hey, we need some regulation, I think it's going to happen in some industries. Healthcare, I think you're going to probably need, or all those kind of industries, or maybe in the financial industry, you might have to have some sort of certification that says, yes, I know what I'm talking about, to be able to support a healthcare industry IT provider or something like that, just because more and more and more rules are getting piled on us for that to happen. So maybe there'll be healthcare computer police or something to that effect. But overall, I don't think it'll work. I don't think it's going to fix anything because Bob's brother will still fix everything. And I think the way that The public looks at it now. They're not going to take the time. They're just going to want their plumbing fixed and their computer fixed as cheap as possible.
Sure. But even looking at it, that aspect of it, I mean, insurance becomes a big thing, right? Insurance companies are not going to cover a company's loss due to IT failures if an unlicensed technician was the one doing the work. CompTIA, Microsoft, they've already created these certifications to get people certified in different aspects of IT. I believe that there is a healthcare, I haven't looked, but I believe that there is a healthcare certification through CompTIA, I believe. I'll have to look into that. So we have a structure that's already there. The problem right now is it's a joke, right? It doesn't mean anything. We've talked before about how I don't have anybody ask me what certifications that I have, really, because it never comes up. It would come up if you had licensing, right? So I get what you're saying, and I know that everybody's going to have a different opinion on it. But you're right. It's something that we're going to need to want as an industry, and as an industry of professionals, we would have to stand up and say we want to be treated like a professional, and we want these regulations in place in order for a body to be created to lobby for those laws in the first place.
All right, let's go ahead and let Kurt talk about what he thinks about this subject, and then we're going to dive in. I put some questions and different things together in some subjects to talk about working through this process to see what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. So, Kurt, go ahead.
Okay, so there's some of the ideas that Chris has that I like, which is trying to get the IT community together in order to enforce something, to enforce regulations, to try to cut down on some of the pizza tax. Like John said, he believes a lot of it wouldn't get affected. But I wonder that if you do, is that going to represent something that we would have to have something that's going to sit up on our wall and it says, hey, I'm regulated, by whatever laws to get away from the pizza techs that like to do our work, undercut us by price. Maybe they don't do as good as a job. Maybe they do. This subject can be a touchy one because you got so many different things and so many different aspects to go from. So, I don't know. John took a lot of the wind out of my sails.
Well, I just go back to the argument that there's always going to be somebody that's going to do you, whatever, regulated or not, the job cheaper. Meaning you might have a brother or a friend that's a lawyer that'll write something up for you or come fix your plumbing or, something like that. So as long as the intent here is not to try to stop pizza techs, because that's not going to stop. I mean, it's just not. It doesn't stop in the roofing, construction industry, drywall, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't stop. If the idea is that we want to make computer techs like ourselves, I'm going to say prestige, but I don't think that's the right word that I'm here, but more regulated from the effect that, we're meeting a baseline. It used to be get your A+, and that was the baseline. If we're just trying to meet some sort of baseline to say, hey, we're not just idiots and we just didn't install our own cable modem at home, and now we're networking engineers. I'm not against that, but I guess that's where I would end. I don't think full regulation on everything that we do that we need to report back, and like a doctor where you have to have ongoing training and all that. That might be a good idea, but I'm not against a baseline thing. But full regulation, or maybe is it any different than just getting a cert that says here, I know this, I passed this test? I mean, that's kind of what we have now.
It is what we have now, except right now you can go pass a test by memorizing everything in a book, and now you've got a certification for a year. Or if you did it before the cutoff, whenever that was, then you're grandfathered into it. What it would be more like is, okay, so let's, I'm going to use registered massage therapist as an example, because it's the closest thing that I can think of to what I'm thinking of. So in Canada, to be a registered massage therapist, you have to go through school for that. I'm not advocating for that. I think that we could treat this like a trade and you can apprenticeship under somebody. In order for insurance to pay for your massage, you have to go through a registered massage therapist. To remain a registered massage therapist, you have to have continuing education courses. So you do have to continue to learn. It's not something that you can just kind of fall off on the side. So, you know, the idea would be that you take a couple of refresher courses to be able to keep yourself in there, to keep your certification. And that way, you know, if let's say you wind up in some sort of a catastrophe, some business goes down, the insurance company has to pay out a whole bunch of money because of the business loss. They're going to be looking to make sure that they were using a competent technician. And the only way that an insurance company can prove that you're using a competent technician is if they have some sort of a designation behind them that says that they actually know what they were doing while they were in there. So no, you're right. It's not going to, this isn't something to just get rid of pizza techs. That's never going to happen. But I think that we would have a much bigger push to use certified technicians on a small and medium business standpoint, because corporate IT generally doesn't pick up somebody that either isn't in-house or doesn't know, you know, isn't established. There'll be a much bigger push to use somebody that knows what they're doing. There's also going to be a much bigger push to have new technicians coming into the field to learn under somebody and to actually get themselves to a point where they can do that kind of work before they jump into a contract that they wind up drowning in, you know, which is something that happens in our industry quite a bit now.
All right. So let me break some things down since we're going to dive into some subject here. The first thing would be, and the first thing that I see wrong as far as, not what you're saying overall, Chris, but here's some of the caveats to this type of business or this type of regulation. Right now, there's a lot of business owners that I would not let work on my computer because they're not techs anymore. And they are basically, they went from maybe starting off as a single tech to running a company, but really haven't worked on computers in years because they have people for that. So then how do you regulate the business owner versus the techs? Or you just, if you're actually working on machines, you actually have to have that license. And if that business owner ever touches a machine, or looks at a network. So they're not keeping up with skills. Cause I've talked to a lot of business owners that go, yeah, I don't know what my guys are using. I have no, things change all the time. I have no idea. So how do you deal with something like that?
Well, continuing education plays into that. So if you have, I don't know, I'll just throw out arbitrary numbers. If you have to every 3 years get 10 points worth of continuing education points, and you know there are different online courses or books or things that you can do to earn those points, all you have to do is document doing those three or four things, you know, every 3 years, and it proves that you're still keeping up with the industry, at least in some aspect of it. So no, you're right. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to get rid of it, but it's going to reduce the number of situations like what you're talking about, where somebody really just has no idea what's going on anymore because they're not keeping up with it.
Right. But you would have to say, well, I'm sorry, you can't own this company anymore because you have no idea what's going on.
No, absolutely not. But you wouldn't be the one to go out and do the work. So what does it matter?
Okay.
Right. It's not about the owner of the company. It's about the technician actually doing the work. Just like, you know, I could own a building that houses doctors. That doesn't mean that I get to go treat the patient.
Okay. And that's a perfect example. But what I end up seeing is I do see the business owners. There's a lot of times in this type of industry, in this industry, they do have to sometimes dip their toe back in when things aren't going exactly right. And it might be a little bit of a learning curve, but they get back in there and they fix whatever maybe a technician messed up or whatever, just from their back knowledge. But it doesn't mean that they're going to be able to pass a test or, you know, earn any points or anything like that.
Well, kind of exactly what CompTIA is really trying to do. I mean, because they push the certifications they do, the training, the testing, and the continual education right now. So. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris. You're just basically saying that let's just use CompTIA as our governing board. If all of us had to register with CompTIA, pass whatever they're saying is the minimum of certification, stay current with them, use continuing education, and then CompTIA would be the governing board for us to set that what we're calling the basic minimum level to be a competent or certified tech or business.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some tweaks that I'd make to the A-plus certification portion of it, to be perfectly honest with you, to make that a base. But yeah, absolutely. CompTIA already has everything in place for it. It would just be something that would need to become a requirement for, you know, for certain things like the insurance aspect of it, and you know, really pushing into the business sector. So yeah, we have a structure in place for it, and it's not like CompTIA is not big enough to be able to lobby.
Well, yeah, they already do.
So yeah, with CompTIA, you know, already being in place, I guess the other question is CompTIA going to want to take something like that on in the first place to try to regulate every single thing that every tech does in order to run their shop? And, you know, with, like you were saying, Jeff, that, you know, with a business owner, and they used to be a tech, and then they don't focus on the tech side, they focus on the business side, you know, it'd probably be a good idea, in my mind, my opinion, would be if that business owner is going to run that business, they should keep their knowledge up of what they're running. Not just, all right, I'm going to have a bunch of guys taking care of computers, and I'm just going to get my money. You know, it should be, I should know what's going on with everything that they're doing, and if we have to change something or regulate or whatever they got to do, at least that business owner knows what's happening, and they'll understand it. Because techs will come back, and they can say whatever they want to the business owner, and it's going to go right over his head. So, yeah, it's, yeah, this is kind of one of those touchy subjects. I came back at the right time.
Now, that's not to say, though, that somebody couldn't own an IT company and not hold their certification as long as they have somebody managing those teams, right? And I mean, I'll use doctors as an example. You know, whoever owns the hospital doesn't necessarily know the first thing about the difference between aspirin and Tylenol, right? But there's going to be the dean of medicine, I guess. I don't know. I don't really know that much about the hierarchy of a hospital. But, you know, the owner doesn't have to know what they're doing. Just whoever's in charge of the people underneath them does.
So in what you're saying is right, except that in the smaller case, what happens a lot of times, and we go through, the IT industry goes through its ebbs and flows, especially small, medium-sized businesses, residential. And so going through these ebbs and flows, sometimes we've got to let techs go. And then who takes over that responsibility? You might have been out of it for 10 years. You might have had 10 good solid years, and then all of a sudden it's 10 years later and I haven't kept up, but I've got to get back in there. Now what do I do?
Well, that's a really good question, Jeff. And I guess I'm going to respond to that with a question then. Wouldn't it have been a lot easier for you to get back into it if you had kept up with it in the first place?
Oh, absolutely. Now, let me take a real world scenario. So a lot of people may or may not know this. I am at my job right now at Ford Motor Company. I'm a machine repair apprentice. So yes, a 47-year-old apprentice. And so let me tell you about a couple of things. Chris is right. With the government, they basically pay for my first 2,000 hours. They pay my hourly wage, which is done in a year. So that's already over. And so they get a little bit of money there. But here's the thing. So I'm being taught on the job training. So it's a little bit different. And this is why I don't really, taking a test means absolutely, quite honestly, zero to me. It just does. Because if I can take a person, and let's bring it back to the IT industry, if I can take a person in under my wing and teach them, here, replace this motherboard on this laptop, or, you know, do a virus removal and cleanup on this machine, or set up that router with these particular settings, or whatever it might be, and I can teach that along the way. So that's basically what an apprenticeship, in my opinion, it would be on-the-job training apprenticeship. But that also runs into a couple things. And I understand why some people are for it, some people are against it. Because if you become a governing body that says, we're going to regulate this, now if I'm inclusive in that and I'm paying a fee to whatever the body is, and now I've got to be able to take on an apprentice, there are a lot of people, and I will say the majority, because we've got them in our place that don't want an apprentice, and there's no way you could give them an apprentice. They will make life miserable for the company and everybody around them, so they just shy away. And then there's other people who don't mind. It's not that they really want to, because here's the thing, from the company side, when a company looks at it, we go out on a job to fix something, and my journeyman is explaining things to me and how to do this, how to do that, in all these different things. We're actually costing the company time and money. And it's just, they just got to eat it up. There's nothing they can do. So that's a lot of business owners are running around like a chicken with their head cut off already. They're not really going to want to take on that extra added responsibility to teach somebody. So that's kind of where I see there's a little bit of a problem with that whole scenario. Chris, no rebuttal? Chris,
you
know, is quiet. Holy cow. No,
because I'm trying to think of the right ways to word all of this. Because you're right. You can't force somebody to take on an apprentice. And it's not going to be for everybody. There's also going to be people who are going to be in a rural area, and it'll be really difficult to find an apprentice for them because there's nobody around to do that. Now, that said, with our type of an industry, unless you're talking about the hardware type things, right? Replace this monitor, replace this motherboard. A lot of that type of thing can be done online, right? So it's not like, you know, online, you can't have somebody that you're apprenticing through remote. I mean, my God, we're in the IT industry. I'm sure we can figure out something with a computer to do this. There's going to be ways around that. There's going to be ways for us to be able to figure it out. But we need to first figure out how we would wind up structuring the entire thing, right? I can't tell you how best to deal with somebody that lives up in the sticks that needs to apprentice under somebody unless I know how many hours they need to apprentice and what type of things they need to learn during that apprenticeship. For continuing education, you know, is it going to be as simple as going into a meeting room where somebody shows you how to replace a laptop screen and you get a point? Or is it going to be more something that you can just take an online course? Right? You know, I don't have an answer for that. What I do have an answer for, though, is honestly, I think that it would improve the quality of service that we're providing our customers overall, and that it's going to be able to help us get more work, right? If you've got something that you can show that's recognized by people, then it's going to be a lot easier to get your foot in that door.
See, here's the other thing, too, that a lot of people, here's another thing that you have to think about also, is that my company is paying for me to go to college. So not only am I getting on-the-job training, which, again, only the first 2,000 hours is paid for, the company's paying me now. They pay me for overtime and all every time I'm there. They're also paying for me to go to school. And so they're making this apprenticeship, a lot easier for a lot of people to be able to take on. And so I look at that stuff and I go, is a cost for a small company, they're going to have a hard time swallowing some of that stuff and going. And the only other thing you can do is go, hey, you either go or you don't get into this industry. And I think either way, you're going to lose a lot of people.
Well, maybe losing a lot of people isn't such a bad thing. I think that's what the end goal is here, is that we're eliminating or culling out the chaff, you meaning the pizza techs. I don't disagree with anything Chris has said, except for the mandatory regulation of it from the government. I think the problem is, or a better way to do it would be, let's all become CompTIA members, get behind an organization that puts that message in front of our customers saying, use these techs that know what they're doing, because we make sure they know what they're doing, over the guys that have no idea what they're doing. The pizza techs.
Well, and the part of the problem too that I see, because Chris, you were talking about hardware and actually doing that hands-on, which I think is important, and also you were talking about doing an online test of some sort, an online course. See, I personally, as many different things I've been through in my entire life, I don't personally get anything out of any type of online course, because when I actually get there to actually do it, it is nothing like what I learned in an online course. Nothing.
Well, it's just like you're not going to perform surgery after you read a book, unless you are,
you got to get in there.
That's right. But right. I also think that everybody listening to this show already does what Chris is advocating. Meaning, I would suggest most of the podcasts I listen to, unless they're entertainment based, are because I'm trying to get some ongoing education in the time that I have running in the vehicle, working on something on the tech bench, just trying to add to my knowledge base through continuous improvement. And I would suggest that if we took the top 25 guys that are running their business, listening to the Podnuts Network, I would suggest somewhere on their top 10 list of what they do to be successful in their business is continually educating themselves and their employees if they have any.
So, absolutely.
I mean, it's a high five to Chris. He's exactly on. I just don't like the idea of the government or some agency getting us regulated. I would be more in the fact of jumping in with some organization that says, hey, these techs are the techs you want to use because they know what they're talking about. And then maybe that organization works with the insurance companies and said, hey, these techs are brilliant and they know about the IT industry and healthcare. So maybe our customers that we're working with maybe get a lower insurance rate because we know what we're doing. The insurance company feels better. So there's this circle of benefit. But those that don't want to play in that realm don't have to.
I can completely get beyond that because even if you did wind up having, you know, full government support on it and all of that, you wouldn't wind up running into a position where somebody gets fined or somebody gets imprisoned for working on a computer without a license. What you'd wind up with is, an insurance company that either wouldn't pay out on a claim or would charge a premium on using a technician that doesn't fall within their requirements. If CompTIA or a company like CompTIA could set something up like that, the biggest thing is getting it in front of those customers, right? And having not the technician, right? Because if I'm going to somebody trying to get their business and saying, oh, well, if somebody doesn't have the certification, you shouldn't work with them. That just sounds self-serving. But if they're hearing from their insurance company.
Last time any of us went to a customer and they said, are you certified?
Right. It doesn't happen because it's not in front of them. Right. They don't know.
So that's what we would expect of the body that we're joining.
Absolutely. I would expect CompTIA.
Yeah, CompTIA.
Absolutely. Using CompTIA, right? I would expect CompTIA would be educating the insurance brokers, educating small businesses through whatever means that they could afford to really push to them and saying, listen, the technicians that carry our card, the technician that has our certifications, those are the technicians that have proven that they know what they're doing. And as it stands right now, I show somebody my A+ certification card and they're like, that's fantastic. Are you insured? They don't care about the CompTIA certification because it doesn't mean anything to them. And I'm telling you that CompTIA and Microsoft would be getting a lot more of my money for these certifications if my customers had any idea what they were.
Well, and here's something too. And I remember years ago, Mike Smith on the Mike Tech Show talking about basically he would go in and set up a network and he would have to hire the tech that was going to oversee that network. And he basically said he would get 200 resumes. And the one caveat he put on there was, I think it was you had to have at least an A+ certification. And he said out of 200 resumes, 195 of them went into the waste paper basket and he only looked at 5 and he goes, to be honest with you, there are probably better techs in the pile that I just threw away, but I have to have some sort of base. So it's almost a false positive, really, that just because you are educated, and I'll use this as an example, just because you're educated or have a journeyman's card or whatever does not mean that you're necessarily good at your job.
I think the idea behind that, though, and I agree 100% what you're saying, though, is who has time to go through all 200?
I agree.
You got to set some base somewhere. And I think if we're talking about bases, I think that's the basis of Chris's argument, that there just should be some baseline somewhere that says, just what I said. I just installed my cable modem at home. I have 2 computers. They're on a network. I'm now a network pro. No, you're not. Where's the baseline? Where do we draw that line to say, I'm a certified technician, and I'll just say I'm a hobbyist? That might be really good. That might be just fine. And then I'll pick on Kurt a little bit. Maybe Kurt isn't dealing with doctors, orthodontists, and Chris and I are. Kurt may not need to play with CompTIA. He's doing just great, doing the repair shops he does. He does more business than us, but he just doesn't play in the roles that we play. So this may not apply. But there's no regulation that's saying that he has to play.
I was going to say, and Chris, one of the things you had brought up was you had said that there was a couple that had, or somebody that had lost pictures on somebody's computers because they probably did a nuke and pave. And when they did that nuke and pave, lost all their pictures, and it's the only pictures they had of their wife or husband or whatever it was. And you kind of felt bad about that, which I get. And part of the, you know, part of when I was listening to what you were talking about is I, quite honestly, I look at some of those things and I go, from the customer side, you get what you pay for. And if you're going to pay for somebody that doesn't know what they're doing, that kind of should be a red flag. But for the standard consumer, they don't care. They want the cheapest price.
But I don't think that's the industry. Oh, industry Chris is talking about necessarily.
Yes. No, I brought it up during my rant because I was upset when I was doing the rant. Let's be honest here. But I mean, you're absolutely right. Now, if the customer had known, had been educated, right, that there is a difference between a certified and an uncertified technician, had the customer known that there was somebody out there that could get better advice than this, you know, discount tech, if there had been any kind of information that's readily, I shouldn't say readily accessible, the internet is readily accessible, but any kind of information out there saying maybe I should research this first, then I think that probably would have been a completely different scenario for most people that wind up running into that problem. The issue is that there's nothing out there. You don't see TV commercials or internet ads or anything like that advocating to find a licensed technician. You see it for mechanics. You see it for plumbers, right? The unions that are out there that talk about, you know, make sure you're using a union tech for this type of work. You don't see anything like that from places like CompTIA. And I'd like to challenge them to do that, because then I honestly think that we as certified technicians would wind up having more work. Not that it's going to make the cheap techs go away, but at least there's going to be less of a chance of that type of confusion and problems happening out there.
Chris, I think you're part of the 1%, because I can't remember the last time I've ever seen a commercial or anything for plumbers or any other industry saying, look for a certified tech, because even when I go to get my car repaired, I don't go in there, and even though certificates are up on the wall, I don't go, oh, John Handy is working on my car right now. Let me go see if he's got his is he up to date? I don't care, because I'm walking into a place of business that I suppose, because they have on their paperwork or whatnot, certified techs, blah, 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 blah. But I don't really, that's not something as a consumer that I actually look for. And I think even on the IT side, I don't think people are going to be looking for that. No different than what John was talking about earlier. You can get somebody to come out and do your roof that might not be certified, but they know what they're doing. And so, but they're going to charge me, you know, $3,000 less. Yeah, go ahead. I've seen your work. Go ahead. You do it.
But there, so the difference there, though, is you've got more than a decade of education of telling you that they're in the automotive industry, to be a mechanic, you need to go through all of these things. That's common knowledge at this point. And I guess my point is that it's not common knowledge that there is training out there for technicians to take so that they understand what it is that they're doing. And I think that that's a failure on the industry.
Oh, come on. There's ITT Tech.
We're not even look. So, but to your point, because of that over a decade of assumption about a car mechanic having a license, when you walk into a shop that is an auto body shop that is a mechanic's place of business, the assumption at this point, and it's a correct assumption, is that the city that they have received their license from in order to be able to practice their business, because you do have to have a license from the city to do that, make sure that everybody that's working in there is either apprenticing under a licensed technician or is a licensed technician. And if they ever get caught not doing that, they lose their city license and they wind up not being able to do work. So if you were, let's say, to go on Kijiji and find a auto repair mechanic on Kijiji that says that they can do it for $200 less than what the shops do, I'm going to be asking to see their license, but I don't need to do that when I walk into an auto body shop.
And I think the argument would be, too, if we asked every woman that's listening to this show, and not to be sexist, just because they could care less about cars generally, and you said, well, what is the automotive certification? I would bet at least half of them would maybe have heard of ASC certification versus ask or let's just say more of them would have heard of that than versus any computer certification if they're not computer related.
Sure.
I mean, that's what we're, so somewhere along the line, the ASE did a better job of marketing certification than any computer organization has.
Right. And that's the failure.
My argument.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, are you talking about from to be certified from both the residential side and the small business side? Like if I support both, you need to have certification no matter what IT work you do? Or are we just talking about if you're managing businesses and you've got to have insurance and all that kind of stuff?
Look, if we're talking in my perfect world, okay, in my perfect world, in order for a technician to get insurance in order to be able to insure the work that they are doing for their customers, they should at least have an A-plus certification. So in a perfect world, everybody has insurance before they start doing work on other people's computers. So yeah, in a perfect world, you would. But this isn't a perfect world and it never will be. So, you know, we're not in a position really to be able to force that issue. However, I do think that if we got into a state where, you know, if I go to try to get insurance for my IT company, they have to say, okay, now everybody that we're going to pay out any insurance claims for, if you're doing the work, you have to have your certification. That would push it so that at least in the business side of things, people are going to be certified. And hopefully that would trickle to the majority of the residential work as well.
I'll be devil's advocate again and argue that I would be willing to bet that most computer business owners are not properly even insured.
Well, yeah, because we're not in a perfect world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you're
absolutely. I mean, now you're asking, we're asking for that next layer, which I'm all for to do something correctly, but I mean, we can't even get guys to insure themselves correctly. And I'm not talking about for their customers, I'm talking about to protect themselves.
No, you're absolutely right. Customers,
so then you get insured to protect a customer. Now we're asking them to add on certifications.
Right. So, let's say this though. If you can't get insurance without a certification, then having a certification generally means that you're going to have insurance, right? If you're going to go through all that trouble, you're going to do it. So I guess the question that I would ask you, John, is if we educated business owners properly outside of the IT sphere, and business owners outside of the IT sphere suddenly started saying, you know, before I have somebody working on this, I at least want them to be CompTIA certified. They don't need to know what the certifications mean. But just to get that base A-plus certification, to have that CompTIA logo on whatever it is that you're doing, that do you think that as an industry, we would be in a better position if they're asking for that? Let me see your CompTIA card.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing at all to do some best baseline. Two things. One, I think that's also an asset for us because let's say I'm a rookie and I'm going to get my CompTIA certification. Hopefully, since CompTIA is on my side, they're going to train me up a little bit and say, hey, you need to have these insurances. This is what we recommend. This is what you have to get the certification. Some sort of liability, some sort of protection, some sort of whatever. But, you know, a great example of this is I work with a ton of orthodontists, and some of them are just fantastic people and fantastic orthodontists. But in orthodontic school, they don't teach a crap about business. So they're horrible business people. But the very successful ones have excellent business managers who know nothing about orthodontics except what they learn, but they're fantastic business people. And, you know, I can tell you which ones have those relationships because they're the practices that are extremely successful. So, again, this goes back to, are you the guy that wants to turn the wrench or do you want to be a businessman? And, you know, are you doing the right things in your business? Again, I go back to that survey. You know, if we asked the top 10 people listening to PodNuts and the top 10 things they did, you know, they would be doing all of this already, in my opinion. Yeah. But I still go back to say I wouldn't mind to have my CompTIA card just to set me apart from everybody else.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, and we keep on coming back to that same thing, that CompTIA card needs to mean something to the person that you're showing it to other than, you know, something that you might have just gotten off the internet.
Absolutely. You know, because I'm Microsoft certified back in 1990-something, you know, which means absolutely nothing for the Microsoft certs that I have because those products don't even exist anymore. And I'm grandfathered in A+. You know, I don't even know what's on the current A+ test. You know, I would imagine I could pass it, but the guys that got to take it now got to renew every year. So.
Right. Right. And like me, I don't have the A-plus certification. And we discussed this before on a, you know, podcast a while back.
And for a business owner, I would say you don't need it because customers aren't asking for it. But if we had some sort of governing body that Chris is talking about, then we have those things where maybe the CompTIA convention would mean more, the ongoing education would mean more, and with more members, maybe they have the marketing revenue to put that in front of the customers that are important to us.
All right, Marvin is in. Marvin, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic, boys.
Awesome, man. So I know you want to contribute to this conversation because I know this is near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, it is. But here's where I think part of this is going to go. First of all, nothing's really going to happen in this industry until there starts to be some sort of catastrophic loss of life or loss of livelihood, which basically, you know, think about all the industries that now have regulation, and a lot of it has to do with but a lot of it has to do with stuff that, you know, there was either some class action lawsuit that forced somebody, some governing body with authority, which right now CompTIA, yeah, they can lobby, but they don't have authority. They can't go out and actually punish techs or anything like that. So think of all the industries. You mentioned the plumbers, where a plumber can basically ruin a house. And a house is probably the number one asset that the government will protect for people outside of an automobile, which somebody can use to kill somebody if driven improperly or under the influence. Building codes with loss of life of hurricanes and natural disasters, those types of things. So you've got to have some riding factor that's going to force somebody to do that.
Well, my fear would be, though, that it would be reactive. We don't want to. I think Chris's advocacy here would be to get out in front of this so that if something or when that, and I think you're absolutely right, B, that I think that is going to happen, especially with everything that is in the news now. You know, something really, really big will probably happen. So, again, I think Chris said we all have to get together and advocate for this to head that off at the pass so that we can set those things now before it becomes a reactive response from the government. They, you know, usually when they react, it becomes overbearing and it's.
Yeah.
They're trying to do that. And some companies and organizations are trying to do that with regulations like compliance for HIPAA, FINRA, where, you know, people can lose a lot of money or, you know, things like that. So there are those steps, but really it's still not truly enforceable. And, you know, until you get to the point where somebody can force a city or county agency to have some, you know, city employee driving around finding, you know, the pizza tax or unlicensed businesses, you know, because remember, if you're a real business, you should have a business license. If you're transporting equipment around, you should have a, you know, mobile license is what they call it. At least that's what I have here in Fort Lauderdale. I have to have a license both for just being a business and for transporting equipment. So until you can have somebody following around and policing it, because even HIPAA is not really, they're starting to police it with fines, but it's a self-governing thing is what they're doing.
Well, okay. So, but let's look at loss of life and let's look at loss of, you know, loss of homes, right? You know, loss of homes first, because it's less drastic, than loss of life, a business, right? So, you know, if there's a business that uses, anything on a computer that if they lose that thing, whether it be a patent or, you know, their database or whatever, if that's lost and that could cause their business to crumble, obviously the IT isn't being managed properly. But that's something that could wind up not only devastating somebody to the point where they lose their business, through lawsuits or just through the loss of that information. But that could very quickly trickle down to losing their homes, putting their families out on the street. So it's not like that couldn't happen now. And for loss of life, you know, hospitals are being really, really pushed, at least up here in Canada, to go paperless, right? So that everything is in a digital database that can be transferred from one doctor to another. So I can tell you that, you know, the bigger doctor's office that I deal with, their IT, everything is completely paperless. Everything is completely computer driven. And if they were to lose that database, and they, let's say, you know, they wind up losing a patient file before it could be transferred over to a specialist. I mean, that's the type of thing that could wind up getting somebody killed. So if you're, maybe the government wouldn't step in to do anything for that. But, you know, if the insurance company won't pay out on the malpractice suit because they weren't using a properly insured and certified IT professional, that would force the doctors to use a properly certified tech. So there's absolutely ways that it can be done within the industry without even needing to get the government involved.
Which is what they're doing, because a lot of those things are going to court, and because somebody's being held responsible. And the question is going to be, is it going to be the tech or is it going to be the technology? Because think about it, if a hard drive fails and data is lost, is that the tech's fault or is it the technology's fault? But what you also are pointing to correctly is, if there's a breach and a technician did not implement a proper firewall, proper endpoint protection, that should fall on the tech, and somehow that should fall under some sort of regulation. The question is, who's going to do it?
No, absolutely.
I mean, it kind of already does. I mean, that's what the compliance is for HIPAA and all that. You know, the OCR and HHS already, through the business associates agreements and all that, already fine the participants in those sort of types of things. So that is already happening.
That's only for reported incidents, though. There's a lot of companies that don't report because they don't want to risk the fines. They'll just take the hit. They may fire the tech and just go find the next company down the road. But if they don't report it, it's not going to happen.
Well, all the HIPAA fines that have been implemented haven't been implemented due to self-reporting. I mean, there have lots of that been, you know, either breach that have been found out in other ways. But you're right. There is no HIPAA police car driving around, per se, for that to happen.
No.
So, and that is all manual.
And I mean, going back to that whole the issue that you brought up with the hard drive failing, right? Is that a technology problem or a person problem? I mean, that answer to me is really easy. There should have been a backup in place. So either the customer signed off a document that stated that they refused to do a backup because they didn't want to pay for it or for whatever reason, then that becomes the doctor's office's fault. And if the technician never even brought up backup in the first place, then that's the technician's fault for not educating the customer, right? Because that's the whole idea of the IT industry. It's not just that we go in and fix things. We're supposed to be educating our customers on how to properly manage their IT infrastructure.
Oh, gosh. Now I'm thinking. Now, one good thing that has come up out of this conversation that I can think of is, if you look at a lot of small businesses, and we're kind of going, you're going to the far edges when you're talking about healthcare and stuff like that. Yes, some of those things are starting to be regulated. They are going to be regulated. That is going to be more important. Financial industry, all that stuff. But one of the things you did bring up, if you're looking at a small or medium-sized business that maybe has a person that works there that is good with tech, and is their own internal IT, well, maybe if the insurance company is not going to cover that company if this person is not certified as a technician, that could actually get more jobs out there for certified technicians. So I think there are some positive things that could definitely come out of this. I don't know that there's going to be an answer for everything. There's a lot of stuff that we would have to go through as an industry. And I think you would have to get a lot of people on board. And I don't know, like Marvin said, it might not be until something catastrophic happens, but that only might be in a certain section of the industry, because things like, if I do my own plumbing in my house and it floods, the insurance company still covers me because I have insurance on my house, even though I did the work. I don't need to be certified to work on my own house. So,
well, yeah, it's just like HIPAA. The dirty little secret behind HIPAA is, you know, it's the Portability Act. So the idea behind HIPAA, maybe when first somebody thought about it, was to make your healthcare information easily transferable, to allow you to move it around, to make it portable. Well, you know, what happened to HIPAA over time And I think the dirty little secret is now with all the regulation and security and all that around it, it's because of all the massive security breaches and the financial loss. I mean, you're talking billions and billions of dollars just in American Medicaid and Medicare alone fraud due to theft of healthcare records. So, I mean, that's where the heavy regulation has come in, and none of that has to do with any bit. I mean, it makes your documents less portable for the regulation we put in. So, I mean, I think Marvin's onto something. That is kind of what has pushed the compliance that we're running into so far is the massive losses just from there, not to mention private insurance fraud. So, you know, moving on from there, that's the big thing that's pushing the HIPAA compliance. You know, what's going to happen next? You know, the energy grid goes down. I would suggest that's going to be something big if that would happen. You know, I don't know where it's going to end up, but that's why we have so much compliance in HIPAA. And, you know, in brass tacks, it's about patient care, but still, it would never have happened without all the billions of dollars being lost. There was a reason that this happened, and that's why.
And this is this goes way, way, way back. When did that act come into play? In the 90s, right?
It's been around a lot longer. I'll look up the exact date.
Anyways, I remember back in the early 90s, when there was a company, there was a mortgage company out there that basically had unshredded documents that put it in a dumpster behind their building, and somebody found out about it. Or the companies that were basically sending their business-grade printers back to the lease company, sitting in a warehouse with a hard drive full of Social Security numbers and all kinds of stuff. So, yes. Stupid things do happen because people are not thinking, or maybe sometimes they need to be made to do certain things. So now, hey, we got to make sure the documents are shredded. We've got to do all this kind of stuff to make sure that the customer, the end consumer, is going to be safe from any of this type of fraud or loss.
Well, 1996 is when HIPAA was passed. I mean, it's changed a lot since then. But for the first 10 years, easy, or even longer, you know, it wasn't mandated. It was all suggested. Well, nobody did it. So that's why we're at now.
So my takeaway from kind of this stuff here that we're all talking about right now is that, like, John, Chris, Marvin, you guys deal more with the hospitals. And you're dealing with dental records. You're dealing with stuff like that. So I can see where compliances have to be followed if you have to have sort of, you know, certifications, anything like that. Whereas me, I don't touch any of that. I'm a break fix tech. You know, I might work with smaller businesses, but it's not on a high end level like you guys are dealing with, where you have to have all those different kinds of protection. You know, I just have them with a local backup and online backup, you know, and hopefully everything goes well. So from that aspect, you know, with me being on the silent part here, is a lot of it is because the majority of you deal with a whole lot bigger picture than I do. You know, mine's more localized, you know, massive residential. 90% of mine is residential versus the smaller businesses, smaller churches, things like that. So I can understand where all that all kind of comes into place. And I can understand where Marvin's coming from.
And you know, but I wouldn't shortchange what you're selling. And I would still suggest what Chris is suggesting would still fit for you as well. But there just might be two paths. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the CompTIA business and the CompTIA professional or something like that, so that there's still a baseline so that consumers could know, you know, the guy coming into my home knows what he's doing, has insurance, has a baseline of knowledge. So I mean, Chris might be running me over here little by little.
Oh,
but that's the only thing I would leave out, though, is that it's mandated that you have to do it, that the government is controlling it somehow.
Okay, so you're not okay with the government controlling it, but you're okay with the insurance company wanting it.
I would be okay with that if that's something that had to be in place, because there will always be carriers that say, well, you don't have to have that, but your rate is going to be a little bit higher.
Sure. No,
or
absolutely.
Or I would suggest it even better from an insurance point of view, where the insurance company would say, well, since you're using a CompTIA tech, we'll give you a discount.
Yeah.
Because then I think everybody wins, because I think the one limit to the insurance company mandating that would be is they might lose customers. So if they said, well, here's our rate, but if you use a certified tech, we'll give you a discount. Just like they say here, if you insure your home, your auto, your business, and all this with us, we'll give you a discount.
Well, it's all about risk management.
The way to do it is to incent people to do this, to incent our customers to want these techs, to incent our business customers to want to use these companies and use us as techs. I think it's the way that everybody wins.
Yeah. It's all about mitigating risk. Right. Insurance companies want to mitigate their risk. So, you know, if you provide a discount for using a certified technician, what you're really doing is you're incentivizing your customers to use a certified technician that at least on paper says that they know what they're doing. So there's less of a chance of having a claimable
it's problem. No different than what is it? Geico that has the little thing you could stick on your car. You drive for 2 months. They find out you're a good driver. They give you a discount. Because they can monitor your speed, they can see, you know, if you're a fast accelerator, how fast you're going, all that kind of good stuff. So yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Is there anything else we can bring up? I think we've kind of covered a lot of different things that could be done. I think it's a long road that needs to be probably dealt with in some form or fashion. I don't know if it ever will be. Just because, Chris, as far as what you're hearing outside, though, from different businesses, what are the cons or what are people saying they don't want to be a part of?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing is they don't want to be a part of paying for something.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of people that don't want to pay into something like CompTIA because they don't feel like they're getting anything out of it. Let's be honest, though, a lot of what we were just talking about talks about putting in reasons to want to put that money into it. So again, that comes back to an industry failure. There are people who just flat out don't want somebody telling them what to do. And I can completely understand that. You know, there needs to be a path to deal with it. Sounds like we kind of got a really good idea on that, on the insurance aspect of it. And really, I'm sure that there's going to be somebody at some point that's going to tell me that they just don't want to go take the time to go through to take these courses, to write these tests, to get these certifications because they're too busy. And I guess my answer to that is if you're too busy to, you know, take a test, maybe you should be looking at hiring some techs and, you know, hopefully they're certified. So, you know, there's a lot of aspects to this that I think that is going to come down to just stepping back and realizing that this is something that can really benefit all of us if it's implemented properly. As it stands right now, I'm in the boat of the people that don't want to take the time or the money to get those certifications because they don't mean anything. So as an industry, we need to make it mean something.
Well, absolutely. And a point that Marvin brought up, which I didn't even think about, not every location actually has to have a business license.
True.
So, you know, John, I know in a great state of Michigan, don't have to have one. So, I mean, there's a lot to, you know, so some places are a little more regulated than others when it comes to that stuff. Again, if you go down and pay your fee for most of that stuff, you can get it no problem. You know, now there are other things that are put in place that we do to protect ourselves as far as either creating a corporation, LLC, or something along those lines to make sure that we're, you know, following our taxes and all that kind of stuff so that we don't get caught down the road with thousands of dollars that we owe because we never reported it.
Well, I would suggest that's what part of this organization would do. You know, provide you that checklist.
Yeah.
Provide you what you need to do to be certified.
No, I mean, that's a good point, right? We keep on talking about educating the customer, making sure that the customer is educated, but I'm willing to bet that there's a fair number of technicians that just aren't self-educated on how to run that business or how to make sure that they have everything that they need.
Well, I always say the only thing I'm sure of is I don't know everything, and that's 100% sure because I still learn things about this business all the time, running a business in general.
Oh, Chris, you're so cute. You think that actually customers actually care about anything other than just getting their stuff fixed?
That's half of the point of the show that we're talking about right now. It was like
they 50% don't care.
Of the argument that was 50, but that was 50% of the argument. They don't care, and that's a problem. They're happy as long as it's fixed. But what happens when it isn't fixed properly? And what happens if it really goes wrong? And I think that's what we really need to educate those people on.
Well, the other thing is they're totally uneducated about technology in general. I mean, think about the questions we all complain about or the problems we complain about with customers doing things technology-wise that they probably shouldn't be playing with. So maybe part of this CompTIA is these people, it's a trusted advisor because they're certified.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just telling, you know.
Yeah. And the other thing too is that, are you going to go based off just of certifications coming through like CompTIA? Or like my idea is, I went to college online for a year to gain a degree for computer science and computer repair. So it shows something, at least I applied myself. So do you think you should have both things? Or do you think it's going to be, hey, I think we should just have CompTIA and that's good enough? Or, hey, he's got a degree. It shows he went to school. It looks like he applied himself. Do you base it off that, or do you need both to make it work?
Sure. Okay, so let's use that as an example. When I went through college and I finished the very first portion of my college education was A-plus certification, maintenance and repair. At the end of that college course, I was given a voucher so that I could go to CompTIA and take the test. It didn't cost me anything. I just had to take the two tests. So I think that you're right. We shouldn't make people pay for all of it. But I definitely think that we do need to have that standardized testing to at least show that somebody can memorize the knowledge that they're given, or just incorporate it right into the course if somebody's taking a course that's approved by the certification body.
All right. Well, I think we've had plenty on this subject, and I don't think we're going to kind of keep going round and around, but I think we brought up some good points, pros and cons to what can be done to make this industry better. And I'm all for making the industry better. I just, everybody's brought up good points, both for and against, or maybe meeting somewhere in the middle, you know, not government regulated, but somehow, have some entity that regulates it and make sure that there's, like Marvin said, fines and different things like that. So I don't think it solves all the problems, because I think a lot of these businesses that do come and charge cheap prices, I think they go by the wayside fairly quickly. And all I can do is tell the customer, and it took me a long time to learn this myself, it's not always the best thing to get the cheapest price when you're getting something worked on or serviced or whatever. Sometimes you need to go, okay, what's my best bang for the buck? I'm not going to pay the cheapest price. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to pay the most expensive price, but there's somewhere in the middle that makes sense. And when you're talking in today's day and age, I think this is the customer's mindset. Well, it should only cost about $20 to do that. All you got to do is push a couple buttons, right? Well, throw in a CD. If it was that simple, you could do it yourself, but obviously it's not. So you're really not thinking through the problem. So I think with that, we're going to go ahead and end that portion of the show off. Appreciate Marvin hopping in there, and I thought he'd have more to say, but apparently not.
We need me to call CompTIA and get this rolling.
Well, no, I had to let everybody else chat. So I can say this, everybody on the panel today is coming from a great position, because each area does need to have regulation. Everything from the residential tech to the commercial tech to the shops. And Chris is on the right path of somebody does need to lead the charge against that. The question is, who's it going to be?
I mean, I think we're all on board that this is, I mean, in some way, a good idea. How do we make this happen if we wanted to pursue this? I mean, I got 5-10 years left doing this before I'm doing it. But do we start pressuring CompTIA, or is this, we get on board with the Acrobo, or what do we do?
Just because I think it's a good idea doesn't mean I'm going to be all gung-ho and trying to make it happen.
Oh, I didn't say you make it happen. I think it would take a small bit of effort from everybody in this industry to make it happen. I mean, you're powerful enough to make a couple calls and make it happen, but I mean, the rest of us got to go through the motions here a little bit.
Yeah, but here's the thing. CompTIA would probably be one of the big organizations. I think all of the different groups that have influence, somebody's got to get a hold of Microsoft to make them put some teeth behind certification, and for Microsoft to do a push out to the corporate community, probably. I think Google has to step up and stop making, you know, Google texts be on the same par with those of us that have you know, put in the work and put in the time to, whether it's get certifications or go through training or become business partners with HP and Microsoft and Datto and all the companies, I think the vendors are going to have to probably come to some sort of deal. So the problem is the internet has made the computing world so big that there's so many facets. It's, you know, it's much different than any other organization. When it comes to regulating a vehicle, you know, the automobile industry, it's pretty much, yeah, there are different vehicles, different classes, but there's only so many manufacturers. So, you know, somebody's got to get their handle around all of these different things. And remember, we have so many techs and so many organizations that don't want to follow the trends, and they want to be rebels, and we got to find a way to rein that in. But if you're asking me to call somebody, who do you want me to, just tell me who to call. I'll call
Ghostbusters.
The A-team.
All right, gentlemen, later.
See ya.
Later. Holla.
Oh, so, all right. So, I do have a quick question here. We are at the hour and a half mark, which we normally end the show off because it's long enough, but we did miss last week. Does everybody have another 15 minutes or so to answer some emails?
Anything for you, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff.
All right. Chris, you good?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and, because we have a literally a stack of emails, and if we let these go any longer, they're just going to keep stacking up. So I do want to get through some of these. And plus, we got Chris here, and the first one is towards him.
Uh-oh.
It says, hello, Jeff and the rest of the Computer Repair Podcast co-hosts. Chris Carruthers of the Remote Support Tech Team had mentioned on one of the shows a while back during the Tips or Tricks segment about using a tool to transfer not just a client's data files and settings, but also their programs. Most of them, or a select few, just depends on the program, and its settings are transferable. I believed it was called Zinstall. Now, it appears to me that the folks over at Laplink have their own version of that software called PC Mover. More specifically, the PC Mover Professional version. With a professional version of their software, it will allow you to do similar functionalities, just like the Zinstall software Chris had mentioned. By any chance, what difference could there be between what Laplink provides with their PC Mover software as compared to Zinstall's software? Greatly appreciate it, and keep up the great work, Nick. Thank you, Nick. Chris, have you used anything other than Zinstall, or anybody used anything PC Mover? Laplink sounds familiar.
Okay, so I guess, yeah, the biggest difference between the two would be that I've used Zinstall, and I haven't used the PC Mover professional. Looking at their website really quickly, though, I can tell you that the biggest difference is the price. But yeah, I'd have to evaluate it to really be able to give you an answer on that.
Anybody else use it?
I used Laplink back in the day.
That's what I was thinking, John. It's been around for a long time. Wasn't that where they used to sell you a little piece of software and a cable, and you could move your stuff from one computer to another computer?
Parallel port to parallel port.
Yeah.
Laplink cable, baby.
Yeah, that's old school stuff.
Now we're going old school. Yeah, so right now it looks like they got some disk imaging, IT managed migration, and some PC setup to transfer. So, again, I haven't used them since probably 19-something or other, so I can't speak to it either.
Now, some quick Google searches, because, you know, that's what we do. That's what we do in this industry. I am seeing a lot of more negative reviews for PC Mover than I am for Zinstall or the EaseUS to do PC transfer, which I haven't used either. Especially on Amazon, it looks like. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's the only thing that I could really say right now is there's a lot more negative reviews on it, whether that's just because people don't know how to use it or if it's because of what the software does, I don't know. It also looks like PC Mover is a lot more geared towards end users, whereas Zinstall is putting a lot more into the IT community and into partnerships. So I don't know. Maybe it's the difference between something that's user-friendly versus something that's going to transfer more data. I'm not sure.
All right, let's go second email. This says, hi, Jeff and gang. I hear you all speak wonders about Arachnus products and would like to look into it more. I've been selling and setting up Ubiquity products for about 2 years now, and for the most part, am happy. With all the praise I hear on the Podnuts Network, I'm wondering if there are greener pastures out there. So it looks like you have to partner with their reseller on aisle8.com in order to purchase their equipment. Is this what you all have done, or am I missing something? Thanks, Kevin. This is Kevin Boynton from the Computer Doctor of Richmond. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate that. John?
Aisle 8 is Arachnus. Arachnus is just a product brand that Aisle 8 sells. So yes, you do need to become a reseller, which is as easy as filling out a form. So there is no difficulty in becoming that, and it is 100% free. Aisle 8 has just implemented some sales levels, so you can get some discounts, free shipping, bonuses, product rebates, that kind of stuff based on the volume you purchase. But, you know, it's a great little, I don't want to say little, but it's a great distribution and product model in my mind, because the support is very good, because they're very familiar. They're very focused on the smaller side tech, I would suggest, versus dealing with somebody like a Cisco or a Ubiquity. And they're very responsive. You're going to find them in a lot of the communities that we do. Like, they've been at CompTIA. They've been a lot of the shows that we go to. So I don't think I've had an Arachnus product failure yet. And I really like their products. I know B has started using them. So I two thumbs up from me.
You're really tempting the fates there, aren't you, John?
Yeah, no doubt.
And I'll tell you, Arachnus will probably, or actually on Aisle 8, will probably be on the show coming up here soon. We're just trying to work out some details. So hopefully they'll be able to talk about their product line and let everybody know what things they have. My whole office has Arachnus products all around me, and I love them. They work, and that's all I can say about that. All right. So hopefully that helps out, Kevin. All right, this one, let's see. Hey, Jeff and company. Just wanted to drop a line and thank you guys for your great work. No problem. I'm a letter carrier and listen to your shows on my route as I deliver mail. I can easily relate to your ongoing theme of providing good service for customers. This is a fantastic community, being so willing and eager to share information and offer help. I'm responsible for a couple of family computers and have helped a few workmates here and there with their problems. You guys are definitely a resource for me. I bet I am not the only one that is a non-pro that takes advantage of your podcast. Your passion for excellence really comes through. Keep it up, and I will be listening. Thanks again, Mark. Mark, thank you very much. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that don't actually do this part-time or for a living, but love the information enough, love technology, and hopefully for those people, we are still giving enough good information out there where people can learn about tools, tips and tricks, things that they use to even help their family members and people they work with. So that's awesome. Very cool. All right. And this is, let's see, this says, hi, Jeff. Did you know that Malwarebytes toolset also checks for issues with hard drives? No, I did not. I always use Crystal Disk Info, but Alex Smith from Malwarebytes reached out to me with a request to run the issue scanner. And I like what I saw. See images below. All right, so yes, I did not know that Malwarebytes toolset, which you can sign up. I believe you can still sign up for it. When we were on convention last year, we had a bunch of techs that signed up, got the toolset. I just downloaded the latest one because I was a couple versions behind, and I basically ran it. And he's right; it does have the hard drive stuff in there. So I'm assuming it checks the smart data, which is basically what Crystal Disk does also. But it's a great way to get that initial view, at least looking at something. I don't use it as my end all because I've been bit one too many times where something still seems wrong with the hard drive. And I've been using PC Doctor and running a super long test on it, but usually finding out that there is a problem deep down inside somewhere that a lot of these other programs, they're just looking at smart data, don't pick up. But hey, it's a great initial tool to at least get an idea. Hey, is everything all right before I start dinking around on this and making it worse? Anybody else use the Malwarebytes tool set?
Yes. Not as much as I did when they first came, brought it out. I put a lot into it to give them the feedback during that portion of time that we weren't allowed to talk about it yet. But it's, to be perfectly honest with you, it's a lot harder to use remotely than you would think.
And they, I mean, this product is fairly brand new, and they are doing tweaks and things to it all the time, improving it, making it better. And, you know, there's a lot of things that definitely can be improved on over time. And let's face it, sometimes there's not a whole lot of stuff out there that tools are actually easy to use remotely.
No, they're not. I think that the Malwarebytes tool set could eventually grow to compete with the TechWaru. There's just a lot more that needs to be put into it.
All right. Well, I appreciate that info. Did I say who that was from? That was from Arturo. Appreciate that, Arturo. Definitely did not know that, and glad you brought it up so that I could download the latest version and actually look at it. This is how we get our information. Because like John says, the one thing I know, actually, I don't say that. The one thing I know is I know a lot. All right. So anyways, that's my narcissistic side coming out. Okay. This is, let's see. I wanted to share this program that I created. It's quite simple. It allows monitoring of any Windows compatible UPS or battery, even laptops, and will execute a chosen batch script or PowerShell file upon reaching a chosen battery threshold. This could be used with PuTTY command line options, even to turn off Linux boxes, such as Synology NAS machines. Really, it's only limited by the script you give it. Link below. Also, thanks for the Outlook mail information last week. I think this was sent to a couple different shows. I wish I had listened to that show earlier. Hope to see you guys at DEF CON next year. Keep up the good work. Not sure who goes to DEF CON, but might have mixed up a couple shows there. I think this was sent to Podnuts Pro and Podnuts. So anyways, that is from Michael in Boomer is his nickname. All right, so battery script for UPSs. I know people have asked about how to monitor that, so I will definitely put the link in there. I cannot provide a warranty or any other thing. If it screws you up, that is on your own. You're going to have find somebody to parse the information and make sure it's good, because I don't know, and I would never pretend like I did. So anyways, it looks pretty legit. It is on it's on one of those places where a lot of people put scripts and stuff like that. So it seems legit as far as I can tell. All right. So this, let's see, Jeff, I think on a most recent episode, you spoke of running CCleaner Portable as the full version includes monitoring, which ties up extra resources on the PC. You can disable the monitoring by going into Options, Monitoring, and uncheck Enable System Monitoring and Enable Active Monitoring. Yeah. Okay. I don't want that. I don't want to go through this whole menu, but I understand. It's kind of a pain, but I agree the portable one is better, and not having it installed doesn't let the clients tinker with anything they shouldn't. If you do install the full version, you are also likely to be asked to install Google Toolbar as well. Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. So, I am all for... Here's a hard spot. Because we use these free tools, and we're so cheap as business owners and technicians, we don't want to pay for anything. But I'm not complaining. I just, you know, there's a portable version, so I use that, and I don't really leave it on customers' machines. And quite honestly, I really don't use it as much as I used to back in the day. Nowhere near. I don't really find a need for it. Most of that stuff is taken care of via Windows or other programs that I use. So it's kind of redundant. Every once in a while, I might run it, but in every once in a while, I'll play with it on my system, but I stopped installing it a long time ago. I see it on a lot of customers' machines, though, that I never touched. So I know customers are still downloading it, installing it, running it. I don't know that it's really doing a whole lot for them. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. So anyone else have anything with CCleaner?
Oh, Yeah, I know. I see some people that have it, and it's really old. They'll have a version that's like 4 years old. So I know they're not touching it. And most times when it comes down to that, I usually remove it. Same thing with Malwarebytes. They have a four-year-old version on there, and I see that they haven't used it in, you know, years. I just remove it. Because most people have it there because they heard it from somebody, and then they just forget about it. It's just another icon on the desktop.
Yeah.
So.
If it's being actively used, it does help, as long as they're not just, you know, going into that registry scan and deleting everything that comes up.
Why?
Because do you know what those registry keys are doing?
I've never ran into a problem running and deleting everything that's in it.
I have personally never run into a problem either, but that's also because I go through the list and I found a couple of registry keys that we didn't want to delete.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I've never not found one, and I have periodically over the years looked through there, and I've never found one that I go, oh yeah, we probably shouldn't get rid of that.
It doesn't happen often, but it's going to be that one time where you're going to have to do a system restore because some, you know, program that they need to use that they don't have the disk for anymore had a registry key that got deleted.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point, Chris, because you just brought up a very good point, is that a lot of times, and I don't know how many people do this, but you should create a restore point if you can right at the beginning of whatever you're doing on that computer, so that if you do host something, which happens to all of us, you can go back to a restore point that you just created and at least get back to where the customer had it messed up. All right, John, you anything with CCleaner?
Did you guys know they have a cloud version?
No, I did not.
Yeah, nope.
CCleaner Cloud.
Interesting. Okay. Definitely have to check that out.
Not advocating, just telling you. I tried it about 6 months ago just to play with it.
Pros, cons?
Expensive.
We don't want to pay for things. And, you know, is it really doing what we need it to do for the price?
$20 an endpoint.
Oh, golly.
I'm not paying $20 an endpoint.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. All right, last email for this show, and we'll come back to the others later. It says, hi, Jeff. Catching up on some podcasts and heard you read The Compound Effect. I love that book. Here are a few others you'll probably enjoy. Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy and The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. I also highly recommend subscribing to Darren Daly, Darren Harding's, the guy who wrote Compound Effect, daily mentoring emails that contain a quick 5 to 7 minute video every day. So they're motivational, kind of make you think type thing. So I signed up for it today, and we'll see how that goes. I will report back on that. Cheers, Ricky Saul. Appreciate it, Ricky. Appreciate the information on those books, and I will definitely check those other two out. Has anybody here read either one of those books, Eat That Frog or The Miracle Morning? No? Okay. We'll have to read them and come back to you. All right, let's go ahead and start with Kurt. If you would please give us one parting thought and let people know where they can find you at.
Well, they can find me at www.mnpcdoctor.com on the website. I'm also on Facebook with the same address. Try not to let people that buy computers from you, if you run a brick and mortar shop like I do, and they buy something from you and they expect that that warranty is supposed to cover everything from hardware to software, and they never have to pay a dime to have it fixed. Make sure you're straightforward with them and tell them 1 year covers hardware. It doesn't cover the mistakes that you make. So I have too many folks that do that to me.
Very good point. All right. And Mr. John Dubinsky, would you like to give people one parting thought and let them know where they can find you?
Well, I'm looking at The Miracle Morning on audible.com, and they have several versions specific to industry, or The Miracle Morning for network marketers, real estate agencies, entrepreneurs, parents, and families. So I thought that was curious. Yes. And the Eat That Frog gets some good ratings too out here. So maybe a good listen. MavenGroup.net. Thanks to everybody.
Awesome, man. Appreciate it. And Mr. Chris Crothers, give us one parting thought and let people know where they can find you.
I'll interrupt really quick, Chris, before you go. B's chiming in the chat that Eat That Frog is a good book.
We don't care what he says. He's off the show. Love you, B. Love you.
You and your van.
SUV. He doesn't even own a van. Anyway.
He doesn't?
No, he doesn't own a van. I don't know if he's ever owned a van, to be honest with you.
Well, he took a picture in front of a van. Doesn't that
count? Yeah, that was one that was parked down the street or something. I don't know.
All right. So parting thought that I want to leave with everybody at this point is take the YouTube link for this show and send it to your ASCII rep, your CompTIA rep, your insurance company, and anybody else you can think of. ASCII, CompTIA, Acrobo, and send it to your Acrobo person. Get this out there because we'll see if we can maybe get some traction at least started. It's not a fast thing to do by any means, but let them know that this is something that we're talking about. Now you can find more information about Remote Support Tech Team and the white label IT services that we can provide your company by giving us a call at 866-568-2813. You can go to our website, rstechteam.com, or you can send us an email at info@rstechteam.com.
Very cool. Thank you, sir. All right, come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern, over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. You can also send an email to podnets@podnets.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. See you next time on Podnets, the Computer Repair Podcast.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.